Thank you for choosing Premier Christian Radio. It's Saturday, the 12th of July, halfway through the month already, and we've got a great show coming up for you today on Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley. Hope you're having a fantastic summer. We've got a really special set of programmes coming up in the rest of July here on Unbelievable. You're unbelievable. Dispensing with our usual format of Christian, non-Christian kind of discussion, we're actually going to be focusing on some key Christian thinkers who have really changed the face of Christian thought in the last 20 years or so. These are what I'm calling the US Masters of Apologetics, men from America who have had a massive impact on defending the Christian gospel. We're going to be hearing from the likes of Bill Lane Craig, of Norman Geisler, Alvin Plantinga, but we're starting today with Gary Habermas, who is an expert, a world authority on the resurrection of Jesus. He's my special guest on today's programme of Unbelievable. So he's going to be joining us on the line from the States, where he is tutor and philosophy professor and head of department at Liberty University. Time to meet our special guest for today, Gary Habermas.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
And I'm privileged to be joined on the programme today by Gary Habermas. Now, Gary is the Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and Philosophy at Liberty University, also chairman of the department there for philosophy and theology. And that's based in Lynchburg, Virginia. Gary, thank you so much for joining me on the programme today.
Justin, I'm very glad to work it out.
It's been great to have you on, because I've really been looking forward to getting this whole series where we're looking at American Masters of Apologetics.
Oh, wow.
It's a very grandiose title, I know, and I'm sure
it is. But you know what? I'll return the compliment. I've been told that your program there is just excellent, and you come very highly recommended by your own countrymen, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, this is a great chance for some backslapping, isn't it? So,
okay.
It's great to have you on, though, Gary, and your reputation precedes you. I mean, if you were to ask many people in the Christian world, you know, if you want someone to explain the resurrection, the name Gary Habermas would probably be not far from their lips. Tell us a little bit, first of all, Gary, about yourself. Growing up, you grew up in a sort of Christian environment, did you?
Yes, I am in our country. I was born and raised in Detroit, the Detroit, Michigan area, and I was raised in a Christian home, and I started questioning my salvation when I was a teenager, and it got pretty, it was pretty severe by my standards. I went through a period of about 10 years where I questioned the faith, and I think the thing I struggled with the most was whether there was any meaning in life, any hope, any future, any objective truth, and I remember thinking once in a while about Edgar Allan Poe's publications, and where people are buried and sort of the leaves blow over their grave, and it's always the fall of the year. And there they are, the grave's covered, and nothing else is going on because they're not alive. You know, they don't exist anywhere. And that was one of the images I used to have in my mind in those days. And I kind of centered on the resurrection, because I tried several major evidences that Christians claimed were good, and I just didn't think any of them. I thought they were either not good or, you know, decent but not decisive. And then I settled on the resurrection, and I realized that if Jesus was raised, Christianity was true. I would grant that, but I spent years and years on the resurrection and just couldn't get it into my head that it was really an event. And so I'll just, one other incident, late in my doubt, I'd already had my, I'd done graduate studies, and my mom called me one day to see how I was doing, and I told her that I thought the doubt had sort of won, and that I was pretty sure I was becoming a Buddhist.
A Buddhist.
Yeah, so that's kind of, I mean, when I say I kind of seriously dwelt into it, I don't see that lightly. Mm. In fact, I woke up a day or two and thought I'd already slipped into Buddhism. I'd already become a Buddhist. So it was pretty intense. And the resurrection was always the star. And I always realized if it did what it claimed to do, it would pull me out of this. But I wasn't secure that it could actually do that. And then I kind of broke through, and I finished my doctoral. My PhD dissertation at a secular school is on the resurrection. So I kind of say to myself that that was sort of the end of my searching. It wasn't. It wasn't the very end. But I use that sort of metaphorically as the end of my 10 years.
It's fascinating, obviously, that you had that quite extensive period of doubt, as you describe it.
Right.
Many people I know as Christians maybe have some kind of, you know, jitters along the way that may be resolved in all kinds of different ways. But for you, having, if you like, a firm theological and philosophical and factual basis was obviously extremely important to you actually even beginning on believing anything.
Oh, absolutely. Even before I had studied much philosophy at all, it just seemed to me, I don't want to use the word intuitive, you know, that's kind of a bad word for philosophers, but I would just say that before I had formal training, it just made sense to me that if the foundation were not true, I just couldn't be one of those guys who would quote-unquote just believe. I needed to have a basis before I could settle back and ask, now what can I be doing about it? Who can I help? Who can I minister to? I kept saying to myself, well, yeah, that's all well and good, but is it true?
Mm. And that search for truth, I imagine, has stayed with you. I mean, do you still consider yourself to be someone who, if you like, is always asking questions? You're not sort of, in a sense, do you, once you do sort of stake your claim and say, yes, I do believe now, do you at that point then become the apologist who is always looking for any way to justify what they believe? Or do you believe you are still someone who kind of would say, well, you know, if I was presented with the right evidence that told me no, then I'd have to believe it?
Yeah, maybe a bit of a crisscross between those two. I definitely am still the kind of person who stops and thinks whenever I see something that purports to be counter to the resurrection or counter to Christianity. I start my morning with a news service, kind of a religious news service that gives me all the news around the world every day, and quite frequently it'll be something contrary to faith, as much, you know, say, for example, the new atheism, and as much as it is for Christianity. Just this morning, an article was published from the Pew Forum in our country, quite a huge group that does a lot of surveying, and it was where Americans are on a variety of topics: God, miracles, demons, angels, heaven, hell. And so I start my morning a lot with these kind of current eventsy kind of things. Some of them are technical, some of them are not. But I always have radar out, and I'm always, if I hear something that looks like it goes against Christianity, quite frequently I will drop what I'm doing, if that's at all possible. If there's no deadline, that's, you know, the next 2 hours, and I'll go through it right then and there. So yeah, I still have a bit of that, but I've also found time in the last 10 or 20 years to settle down and try to do some of the ministry aspects that I always told myself I would do once I knew it was true. And I suppose the biggest areas I work in ministry-wise are with people who doubt. I've written a couple books on doubt, and I've had hundreds of conversations with doubters. I used to take notes on all of them, but it was those interviews that totally changed my mind on what doubt is and what to do about it. And I also, because my wife passed away in 1995 with cancer, I also have been writing some things recently, including two books that are due to come out shortly, on pain and suffering. But I don't consider doubt and pain, I don't consider those my main area. I still do all my biggest research easily on the resurrection, because, as you know, there's no shortage of attacks on the resurrection. Mm. So I don't feel I'm ever going to get away from that as my main area.
Well, 2,000 years ago, people were questioning the resurrection, and they still are. And we're going to be going into some detail in the rest of the program as we look at just the body of work you've done. We'll only graze the surface, I'm sure, but I'm sure it'll be a fascinating graze even so. We're going to be looking in some depth now in the rest of the program as we continue with Gary Habermas, who is a professor over at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. Our first American master of apologetics that we're featuring in this special series of programs here on Unbelievable. He's written many books in the area of the resurrection of Jesus. He lectures and debates widely, and we're going to be experiencing just some of his wisdom in the rest of the program. Do stay with us here on Unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the program, continuing here on Unbelievable with our special look at some of the key figures in apologetics over in the States. And today on the program, Gary Habermas, Gary, the Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and Philosophy at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. And he has been a worldwide authority on the resurrection for many years, over 30 years, I think, Gary, that you've been studying and documenting the resurrection.
You make me stop and count here. My doctoral dissertation was written in 1976, and it was published subsequently. So I guess, yeah, that's about 30 or 30-something years, yep.
I mean, does the subject ever, you know, do you ever wake up and think, I'd rather not talk or write about the resurrection today, given that that is something that's really taken up your whole life?
It is, and I don't stop and think I'd like to walk away from this, never, because I never lack for enthusiasm on the topic of the resurrection. There are days when I think I would like to go more into some of the ministry aspects, and I can't afford to do that because I'm writing this or that article or this or that book on the resurrection. So sometimes I like to twist it to another area, but I never want to leave research in the resurrection.
And of course, there are always things coming up which will in some way plug into your body of research, things like the Da Vinci Code, when that the book and the film came out, things like that documentary last year, The Lost Tomb of Jesus.
Well,
I mean, things like that, obviously, you've got to be ready, presumably, to put out some kind of answer to, haven't you?
That's exactly the sort of thing that when you said, you know, am I still open to these things and do I still get engaged with current events? I did a little bit with Da Vinci, but the Talpiot tomb, which strikes at the heart of what I'm doing, you know, is just the burial tomb of Jesus. Yeah, I stopped what I was doing and did a lot of it. For about 2 months, it kind of dominated my life last year, and a lot of interviews, and ended up doing a little book on the subject. So, that's an example of how you have to be ready if you're going to do things on the subject of the historical Jesus, and especially the resurrection. Great examples of people who are going to go after you. Yep.
For those who aren't familiar with the Talpiot tomb, this was a documentary that was produced for the Discovery Channel for around Easter last year, and in it the filmmaker claimed that he had discovered the burial box of Jesus and the bones therein. And of course, this would strike, if it were true, at the very heart of the Christian claim that Jesus was bodily resurrected from the dead. So what was your, if you like, main thrust of answering those particular claims, Gary?
Well, what I did, the company that published it, Brobman & Holman, here in the States, they just wanted a real quick... They didn't think a big book was going to, you know, this was going to be some kind of passing fancy and people don't want to read 300 pages. So they wanted to know, could I give them, you know, 100 pages? So basically the book reads like here's the 6 major claims made by these folks and here's 15 reasons why each one of them is false. So I end up doing about, I've never counted, but I think I've got, if you total them up throughout the little book, there's probably 50 or 60 responses to their claims. And I am very pleased to note that the majority of scholars, by far, have rejected this. There's virtually no scholar who works in historical Jesus research who thinks this is I can think of one or two who thinks that this is perhaps Jesus. Nobody's saying it is. There may be one or two saying perhaps, and there's a big group of scholars saying they don't want anything to do with it as kind of a non-scholarly topic.
Going to your own involvement in some of the tours and things you've been doing, recently here in the UK, you joined Bishop Tom Wright on the Think Res tour just before Easter. You were kind of in a number of locations around the country giving talks on the resurrection. What inspired that exactly? Do you think we don't have as much of this kind of interaction as you do in the States?
Well, yeah, I didn't have very much to do with it. It was a great tour, and the person who put it together, Peter Luce, he did just a fantastic job. And if I might be off by a month or so here, but I think he and some other key people, Peter May, some others, they were planning this thing for maybe a year and a half before I came over. It took them that long to get it together, and it took an immense time of setting things up end to end, because I'm telling you, I have never gone so far so fast for so long as doing those 2 weeks. And we were at Oxford, Cambridge, Tyndale House. We were at the London School of Economics, flew up to Edinburgh. And then we did some of the larger churches in the UK.